From Superfund sites to brownfields, polluted water, and more, what will it take to clean up Jacksonville's historic East Side? Good morning and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9, and thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live on the radio at 9. Also, make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, seeking what's called environmental justice for Jacksonville's East Side. What do you think about that? What are your questions? You can get on the line right now at 549-2937. Then later, summer is just around the corner. If you haven't chosen a camp for your kids, if you're looking to do that, we've got some ideas for you. Plus, we'll drop in on the annual Miracle on Ashley Street. That's coming up too, along with some other ideas for your weekend. All of that ahead this hour. But first this morning, they are our strong advocate for environmental justice on Jacksonville's East Side. The East Side Environmental Council helped spark the EPA to declare a Superfund site in that neighborhood. The cleanup of that site, it's called Kerr McGee, is estimated to cost some $70 million. It's hoped that will slow the effects of volatile contaminants polluting the St. John's River and the community, too. Brownfields, polluted water, Superfund sites, and more have plagued this historic neighborhood for years. What is environmental justice, and what are the challenges on the city's east side? We're going to find out right now as we welcome Winnetta Wright. She's CEO, and Tina Anderson, she's development manager with the East Side Environmental Council. Ladies, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Good morning.
Thank you. Thank you, Melissa. Thanks for having us on the show.
Here's our question to callers. What are your questions about cleanup efforts on Jacksonville's East Side, challenges in that neighborhood? What are your thoughts and comments about the concept of environmental justice? Give us a call. 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online and send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. We welcome your comments as well on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. Winnetta Wright, let's begin with you. You lead the East Side Environmental Council. And as your website and materials note, Health Zone 1 of this city is actually an EPA-designated environmental justice community. Can you explain what that means?
Yes, Melissa, the East Side Environmental is we're working toward efforts to get the East Side cleaned up. Mm-hmm. Environmental justice is basically just what it says. You know, you work toward helping the pollutants for water, air, and land. And so that is one of the things that we work hard toward trying to get justice for, because we're living in a desperate community.
And desperate is not an exaggeration. Let's describe some of the conditions for people that have never taken a drive through the East Side. Just paint a picture for us. What are you dealing with?
Well, you're not dealing with much, because it's a community that has been disinvested in, and there's no economic development. There's no doctor offices. There's no fuel stations. We lack everything, even to the point of not having a grocery store. So we have a lot of issues. So you'll see a community that's blighted.
Right. And Tina Anderson, as Winnetta pointed out, no thriving businesses, no grocery stores, but also a lot of pollution. There are Superfund sites, brownfields, and air and water related contamination in the East Side, and no investment, declining physical infrastructure. So these are the things that your company, your organization is working on. And these are big challenges.
Yeah, they are. They are big challenges, and challenges that the community as a whole would like to get our arms around and possibly get some of these sites cleaned up. Currently in Duval County, there are 145 Superfund sites. Some of them are active, some of them are non-active. Our project right now focuses more on the Kerr McGee Chemical Site, which is the big Superfund site that sits along the St. John's River and Talleyrand. Mm-hmm. And so the EPA entered their record of decision at the end of 2016 to clean up that site. We were awarded a TAG grant, which is a federal grant, which is mandated by Congress, that the community citizens have a say in how that process is handled as far as the cleanup. So we work with US EPA and as well the multi-state trust. And so the trust, they actually are tasked with the cleanup itself. And then the EPA, they oversee the cleanup process to make sure that the cleanup is within the guidelines and regulations of the US EPA.
And we'll go to your calls in a moment. What are your comments about environmental justice for Jacksonville's East Side? It's 549-2937. Now, for people who aren't familiar with the concept of Superfund site, is any site in this country that's been contaminated by hazardous waste and identified by the EPA as a candidate for cleanup because it poses a risk to human health and the environment around the site? Tell me more, if you could, Juanetta, about this Kerr-McGee site in the Talleyrand corridor. Of course, there's been so much shipping and heavy industry in that corridor over the years. What's the status of the contamination? Tell me more about this.
Well, the site was first known as Wilson and Toomer. And so the site has been a pesticide site for close to 100 years. With the contaminants in the Talleyrand area, we have several chemicals that are, running together, and they are causing chemical reactions. And so some of the chemicals that are in the area are, real harsh and dangerous chemicals.
We're talking what?
Cyanide.
Mm-hmm. Arsenic, cyanide.
Yeah, arsenic and cyanide. Deadly poisons, in other words.
Yeah, very, very harmful to the human health. Now, it's really important to note that you have groundwater, you have sediment systems, and you have soil. So the site itself is contained. There is a fence. Recently, there was a fence had the fence replaced. There were vandals and squatters that were kind of living on the site. So we definitely wanted to get them sort of off the site and secure the property. The other problem is that we're facing hurricane season. And so with rising, rising sea levels, that definitely poses a risk because if there's flooding in the area, then all of those chemicals kind of get pushed into the neighborhoods of folks that live in that area. And so so we definitely want to bring some awareness around that as well as we enter the hurricane season, that the Superfund site has volatile chemicals and that if you come in direct contact with those chemicals, yes, it does pose it's a human health risk.
Sure. And in our urban core, we've got multiple Superfund sites, dozens of brownfields. Those are areas that people would like to redevelop, but they can't because there's a contaminant or a hazardous substance there. There are impaired waterways. There's air pollution. Mm-hmm. This is all coming from industry, heavy traffic, the port.
Yeah.
And when we talk about this concept of environmental justice, that term connotes the idea that an injustice was done. Mm-hmm. And they tend to be historically African-American communities and poor communities that have to live so close to these life-threatening contaminants.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So how do we then bring about environmental justice, not just for the East Side, but for all of the communities that the government has designated as needing this help?
Right. And to put it into focus, there's 450,000 contaminated sites in Florida. Okay. Our job is to kind of focus in on the East Side because that neighborhood is most impacted by the heavy industry that's, as you mentioned, along Talleyrand. You mentioned brownfield sites. That's also one of our goals is to redevelop brownfield sites into greenfield. Right. And so sometimes the obstacles with brownfields is who owns the site. If it's privately owned, and you sort of knock on their door and say, hey, we'd like to take a look at your property for a possible redevelopment of brownfield to greenfield, you know, that owner may not know, have never heard of a brownfield site. And then there's that layer of liability and responsibility. So it's a very complicated process. And so our job is to kind of take that information and make it comprehensive to the community so that everyone kind of understands the process, what a brownfield site is, what you can and can't do, and how can we best as a community address these contaminants, not pointing the finger, but getting to work, getting to the business of getting it cleaned up.
And where are you in that process? Tell me a little bit before we go to some phone calls about the Jacksonville Integrated Planning Project.
Yes, that's the JIP program. When we first started out, we went to a part of the process as far as vetting and having this Kerr-McGee site noted as a national priority site. And so we're in the process of finally getting a record of decision that's called a ROD. And the first step is that we have to secure the site. Then the next step is for them to do the necessary work on the site. And the site will contain all the contaminants. There will not be any transferring, you know, of the soils to any, you know, contaminated site. So that is one of the things that we are working on.
Right, and the JIP report, just you mentioned the JIP report.
Yes.
The JIP report was actually done by SCIO consultants. The US EPA funded that project. It was an 18-month process, a collaborative effort of community stakeholders. There's a long list, if you look at the report, of organizations that were involved in that process. And the purpose of the report was to bring the community focus around the East Side Jacksonville neighborhood, but more importantly, to bring capacity and support and resources to East Side Environmental Council. So if you take a look at the list of partners that were a part of that process, Shadco, Cardno, Duval County Health Department, FDEP, you know, a lot of organizations. The problem, I think, is there was really no way to implement it. So maybe, you know, we have this JIP report, but how do you take that information and actually implement? And so that's where we are now with EPA. We want to dust off the JIP report, update it, and bring the community focus back around how do we tackle these problems of Superfund community, Superfund sites, brownfield sites, the contamination. We have all the data. So how do we take that information collectively and do something about it?
If you're just tuning in, we're talking about the push for what's known as environmental justice on Jacksonville's East Side. Let's go to your thoughts and comments. 549-2937. Mark is in St. Augustine. Hi, Mark. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I was kind of curious. About 25 years or so ago, I was involved in the shipping business in Jacksonville, and there was a discussion going on among some people within the Port Authority and shipping companies that if you planted tobacco on the Kerr-McGee site, it would almost act as a natural extractant of the hazardous waste that was there. But back at that time, I don't know how much merit there was to this, but back at that time, everybody kind of pointed their finger and said, all right, well, who's going to do this? And so I just kind of, you know, obviously 25 years, I mean, more than that has gone by since that site has been able to be used as a water pump location for any good purpose. But I'm just kind of curious about, are there natural remedies, so to speak, that could be used, but yeah, they might take some time, but now you're not, you know, I can't imagine that planting and harvesting tobacco or some other type of crop just to extract that the chemicals out of the ground would cost anywhere close to $70 million.
Yeah, thanks,
was
Mark.
That a whole wide scale?
Yeah, thanks for that. That's interesting. Winnetta.
Yes. Well, one of the ways that we're working toward is to use natural enzymes. And so it's a process of oxidization.
And so not tobacco, but another way of extracting this stuff out of the ground?
Well, just making sure that it stays where it is.
I see.
And so let the site and with the enzymes that they use, I don't know the exact name of the chemicals or what it is, but the enzymes will help to abate the site.
Right. Okay. So what I can tell you specifically to answer the caller's question is that The chemicals that are present at Kerr-McGee, unfortunately, cannot be absorbed by the tobacco plant. They are volatile chemicals, and the process right now we're in with the Kerr-McGee is the design phase. So the ROD has been entered in 2016. EPA has already come up with a plan, mainly to cap most of the contaminants. So there's a capping that will go over the contaminants. And then some of the contaminants will be contained as well. So you have sort of the soil, which is the Kerr-McGee site itself. And then you also have the sediment system, which is the St. John's River. And so there's bulkheads that will get constructed and that will contain the sediment, the contaminants, but will not be sort of removed. And so tobacco plants would not
They wouldn't do the job.
No, they would not effectively
remediate. It's interesting, though, like what people
remediate.
Have heard about this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And for people that want a little history, the former Kerr-McGee Chemical Corporation property, it's at 1611 Talleyrand Avenue. It was used to manufacture or ship pesticides, herbicides, yep. agricultural chemicals.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It dates from the 1890s. Mm-hmm. It used to be called the Wilson and Toomer Fertilizer Company. Mm-hmm. This is a 31-acre site along the St. John's River. The buildings came down a long time ago, but the chemicals remained, and they seeped into the water. Yeah. You, Juanetta Wright, with Eastside Environmental Council, have been seeking action on this site for nearly 20 years now.
Yeah. Yes.
So that's really some tenacity. And finally now, you're seeing some action. This is considered a national priority by the feds.
Yes.
Okay. Let's go to some more calls. 549-2937. Activists seek environmental justice on Jacksonville's east side. Yolanda is in Springfield. Hi, Yolanda.
Hi, good morning, Lisa. How are you?
Okay, thanks.
Glad you're having the show, and good morning to your guests. Thank you, guys. You guys have been in the fight for a long time, so kudos to that. But I have two questions. One of them, could you give a little historical context, background to historic Eastside, to the area. That's my first question. The second question is, how can individual your listeners get involved to help you guys? Because you've been, doing this for a long time. And those are my questions.
Okay. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the history of this neighborhood.
That's a good question. And Miss Juanetta Wright can can certainly frame the historic importance and significance of the Eastside community, really kind of relating back to the big fire that happened, in 1910 in Jacksonville, and how important the Eastside was at keeping the community economic sort of movement in place.
Right.
And I'll take the second question after she's done.
Well, some of the background history is that the Eastside used to be a vibrant and holistic, sustainable community. We had economic development there. But through the years, a lot of people, the reason why a lot of people say, well, why do you have houses right next door to industry? Well, we have people that have generations that have lived in those same sites. And unfortunately, due to the fact that the site is contaminated, the people in the community do not have any way to just pull roots up.
They can't sell the house.
They can't. It's not of any value.
But you said that it used to be a thriving community.
It did.
And what changed that?
Well, I guess the science and a lot of the communities, once it was contaminated, a lot of the companies abandoned a lot of these sites. And they were aware of what the chemicals that they were using and that was in the community. So a lot of the businesses went out of business, and a lot of the companies, the CEOs or the presidents or whatever, they would have their whole family and community buy the industry. So it was like, it was a holistic industrial community.
You mentioned the Great Fire.
Yeah.
What did that do to the East Side?
Well, I wasn't there at the time, but based on what I've heard, the East Side remained intact fairly for the most part after that fire. And so when I mentioned how that part of Jacksonville sort of kept the economy moving, whereas a lot of the Jacksonville area was burned to the ground. Mm-hmm. And as you notice, I'm sure you've heard about the ash sites. Right. And so there
are also cleanup sites in this neighborhood of toxic ash.
Yes.
Yeah. That's right.
And the East Side is, like so many other communities in America, historically African-American communities have often been the unwilling dumping grounds for industry.
Yes.
Companies have tended to put these pollutants in neighborhoods that tend to be African-American more than middle class and white. And that is not an accident.
No, it is a pattern, and it's all over the country. And the East Side is 10 times over in each state or in the United States.
Yeah.
So we have...
You mean the East Side has an even bigger problem than some other communities around the country?
Well, for instance, the issue with asthma, because of the way of the community is situated, and you have the different expressways and thoroughways. So we have the 32206 has the highest rate of asthma than the whole state of Florida. Mm-hmm. So I would think, you know, that is a unique situation.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that other cities could tout the same thing.
Lisa tweets the show, health stats are worse on the East Side than other parts of Jacksonville, like asthma.
Yes.
Due to the pollution in the area.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Here is a tweet from Brian. He's tweeting me about the interstate highways and how they were intentionally set up to cut through middle class black neighborhoods like Jacksonville's La Villa and East Side. And so when the highway went through I-95, that went a long way toward really destroying this vibrant La Villa and East Side community. It cut it in half. And that was one of many things, I think, over the years that have served to affect this neighborhood.
To have
Can you explain
outcome.
A little bit about that? And then we'll go to a few more calls.
Yeah, absolutely. So that certainly creates a problem for the communities when you have these main exchanges running through, you know, the community. Certainly there's the environmental layer of health risk there with the emissions and all of the contaminants in the industry. But yeah, you're right. It cuts the community off from potentially having access to jobs, right? And so transportation kind of becomes an issue when you have these major highways kind of, you know, running through your community. And so it is a problem. We can't sort of move 95, so that's sort of in place forever. But what we can do is bring awareness and hopefully get the community collectively together to problem solve, to figure out ways to infiltrate the East Side with resources, intentional resources that are meant to help mitigate some of the problems that we can't change.
And in a moment, we'll tell everyone what you're doing coming up very soon, actually, next week. But first, let's go to Randy at the Beaches. Hi, Randy. Good morning.
Good morning. I was wondering, are any of these chemicals... is it known what their half-life is? Are some of them self-limiting in terms of their detriment?
Okay, what's the half-life of these chemicals?
So the half-life of those chemicals, I don't have the report here in front of me. That's really a question for Peter Kernaz, who's the project manager at Multistate Trust. But what I can tell you is that all of the chemicals there present at the Kerr-McGee site are volatile. They pose a risk to human health. They impact the groundwater, the sediment system, which is the St. John's River, and the soil. And currently, the site is under a soil testing as part of the design plan of the remediation of the Kerr-McGee site.
Now, speaking of the river, you, the East Side Environmental Council, are partnering up with Toyota, and you're going to be launching a new program next week, getting kids from this community out on the St. John's River. What's going to be happening?
A lot of things are going to be helping. We're going to help the kids understand the dynamics of how the river and the community is connected. We also want them to see that from the Toyota point in the industry, that they, you know, that you, we are looking to get their ideas and their thoughts as far as a green and new green space for it's something that they can be vested in and take part in.
Right. So many students and families live in the East Side, but have never observed the river itself, because they're
never
kind of
been out on
never
the
been
water.
Out on the water, never mm-hmm. been out on a boat, mainly because of, if you look at Talleyrand, it's all this industry sort of blocks the community view of the mm-hmm. river. And so our partnership with Toyota and JM Family Enterprises, we're working to overcome that, right? And so we want to bring the students on a boat ride, and it's themed the economy of the river boat tour. We start at Friendship Park, and we'll take a tour of the St. John's River, a guided tour. We have a Toyota representative that will join us on the boat ride and speak about the operations there at Toyota and how the economy impacts the river and the city itself. We think it's a wonderful opportunity for students to see the river, also to ride the boat. Many of them have never been on a boat, so that'll be interesting too. But to connect them to the river in a way that's intentional, mm-hmm. meaningful, educational, and long-lasting, and to get them asking questions maybe that they weren't asking before, and to explore the ecology of the river as well. You know, there's a lot of dolphins, bottlenose dolphins mm-hmm. out in the river. So it's really a beautiful resource to the community. It's just that certain communities are sort of left out of that process and are left mm-hmm. out of, sort of taking in the benefits and the resources of the river. And so we want to close that gap. And so we're working really hard with Toyota to do that.
And that's coming up next Wednesday.
Yeah, next Wednesday.
9:15, the kids will take off from Friendship Fountain. Mm-hmm. But just one of many things you're working on. So, ladies, thank you both so much for being here and bringing this issue to light for all of our listeners. We really appreciate you being here.
Melissa, if I could really quickly just let the public know that there is a health advisory of the harmful contaminants found in the fish from the waters. Do not eat fish or shellfish from this area. If you go to the Florida Department of Health website, there's a fish advisory there that can kind of guide you through what part of the river closest to the Kerr-McGee site that's been mentioned to not eat fish. And so we're in the process of going through that toxicology report, making sure that we're asking the right questions and making sure that we sampled all of the fish and all of that. But currently right now,
don't eat the fish.
Yeah, good advice.
Winnetta Wright, Tina Anderson, both with the Eastside Environmental Council. Their website is theeec.org. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Much more still ahead. Meanwhile, later, it's going to be a very busy weekend downtown. Everything from next week's Jazz Festival to a home tour in Springfield to a Studio 54 bash. The Spectator will tell us all about it. But up next, some last-minute advice on picking the best summer camp for your children this season, if you're looking to do that. We'll be right back.
Community Hospice and Palliative Care. Since 1979, the compassionate guide for more than 200,000 patients facing advanced illness in Northeast Florida. Today, serving 16 counties, including yours. Available 24/7 to help you and your loved one. More at choosecommunityhospice.com.
Vistar Credit Union, focused on delivering quality service to its members while remaining financially strong. Vistar, we never forget that it's your money. Information available at 777-6000 or vistarcu.org.
Hi, I'm WJCT News Director Jessica Palumbo. As you listen to 89.9, we want to make sure we're listening to you. What do you want to hear more of, less of? How do you listen most? On your radio? Streaming online? Help make sure WJCT stays relevant to you by taking our less than 10-minute audience survey. You can do it right now at WJCT.org. We're listening.
I'm Christopher Kimball from Milk Street. This week, I speak with Kimberly Jung, CEO and co-founder of Rumi Spice. That's a company that imports saffron and spices from Afghanistan, giving local women both a living wage and also a future. Barbecue evangelist Meathead Goldwyn tells me how to make perfect ribs, and we share a recipe for whipped cream biscuits and strawberries. Coming up this week on Milk Street Radio from PRX.
Sunday morning at 7 on 89.9 WJCT.
What's up? The WJCT HD4 pop-up jazz station is now on the air. The Jacksonville Jazz Festival is almost here, so swing out with jazz 24 hours a day on 89.9 HD4 until the jazz festival ends. Like what you hear? Send your comments to music at WJCT.org and enjoy the WJCT HD4 pop-up jazz station.
Welcome back. Well, summer break is right around the corner. Summer camps are filling up now, and now is the time to look for some discounts for these camps. Did you know there are more than 1,000 summer camps in the city this year? Everything from academic ones to sports, vacation Bible school, and more. And if you're like me, you don't quite have your children's summer plans figured out. Well, don't sweat it. Fun for First Coast Kids has done all the work for you. They've put together a comprehensive guide on how to choose the best summer camps for your family, including free ones. So let's hear it. Terry Mishore runs this site, and she joins us now. Good to see you. Good morning.
Thanks for having me, Melissa.
And, you know, this is a nightmare.
Really is.
For every mom out there and dads too, but primarily it's the mothers that do this. They try to figure out what their kids are going to be doing in the summer. And it can be a big challenge to fit all the puzzle pieces together. So on your website, you've got an amazingly comprehensive resource guide for camps.
We do. And I'm with you. I got through June with Vacation Bible School, two camps, sports, and then I quit. So I only have June planned because I couldn't register for every single different camp. So
yeah.
We try to make it easy for you. So one way to start planning and, you know, going through these 1,000 camps is determine when you need camp. So print out your 3 months of summer and then block out your Vacation Bible School. If you're doing that, block out your vacation. Are you working? Are you a teacher home? Are you work from home? Then figure out when you need those camps. And do you want it all week? Do you want it all just drop in day? Do you want it half day?
Sure. Do the schedule first. Now, for many families, doing a bunch of camps is just not financially within reach. So on your website, you've got a lot of tips for parents on how they can do free or nearly free camps. What are some of your suggestions for folks out there who'd like to get their kids enrolled in these things, but they can't afford to do all the things they'd like to do?
Yes. So the first thing you want to do are look for camps that offer discounts. So there's sibling discounts, military discounts. Register with 1 week, one camp all summer, and they give you discounts, waive registration fees. We have a button on our website, Melissa, that is a free camp page. And so those will bring up the Vacation Bible Schools, which many are free. There are some NFL football players that do free camps, girls and boys football. There are special needs camps like diabetes camps, or, you know, if you have a child that's gone through a parent with cancer, they let you go for free and enjoy summer. So look through all of those. Additionally, Jacksonville Children's Commission has discounted camps, as well as Jack's Parks has ocean, tennis, all summer camps that are discounted, and you can get a voucher.
Yeah. So there are lots of ways to save money. It is going to be a little bit of a process.
A little bit of work. You just have to set aside some time and bring your kids into the process so they can determine, do you want a hobby like art or music? Do you want to, you know, try out for a sport in the fall, well, then take soccer or a volleyball camp. So let them get involved to help you in some of that.
Right. And take your cues from your kids. What are they interested in? You know, let them have a part in this search process.
Right.
Usually my kids would tell me what they'd want to do. And what I found too is every year it's something different. They don't necessarily want to go back to the same thing this summer that they did last summer.
Right, you know? Right. Right. And you don't want to spend that much money on a camp if they're not going to like it and you have to push them to go every day. So definitely look through that. And there's so many fun camps. There's camps that you go on field trips all summer. There's a lot of unique ones just specific to Jacksonville. We're a mecca for water sports camps. So you can do sailing, rowing. Of course, we were just talking about there are 6 surf camps in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. There's paddleboarding. Saltwater Cowgirls, like we said, is all girls. Mm-hmm. But it's so popular. The last 2 weeks, they did a co-ed camp. So I want to go. I want to learn how to surf and paddleboard.
Yeah.
You can do an escape room all day, which that would be cool. Have you tried an escape room yet?
No, so, I've heard about them. I've never done it. Tell me more.
It's hard. So you go in the room and a lot of times you're like in the dark. You have to figure out how to turn the light on.
Yeah, how to get out.
So kids can enjoy that. For some reason, there's a chess camp that's here at a lot of the camps. So there's like gaming camps, airsoft, filmmaking, horseback riding, you know, everything.
You've even got a list of the most unique camps in town. As you mentioned, chess, escape rooms, insect expedition camp.
Right.
4-H. Filmmaking camp, horseback riding camp.
Yeah. Anything you can imagine. There's cooking, sewing, go to college camps. You actually go to University of Florida, stay in the dorm, see if you like it, and really get experience and exposure to camp. There's go to the Tallahassee Capitol and learn how to be a legislator. So everything, and it's all organized on our site so you can really find what exactly your child is interested in and look at all the camps that are there.
You've been running fun for First Coast Kids for a while now, and it's really seen an enormous amount of growth. So kudos to you.
Thank you so much. We're excited. We're entering our fifth year. We are very, very busy, Melissa.
Helping
these families find stuff to do.
Yeah, families are always looking for stuff to do. If you've never checked it out, just go to Terry's website, Fun for First Coast Kids. That's Fun, the number 4, firstcoastkids.com. It's time to get the kids into camps. And if money is an issue, Terry's got lots of information on her site about how you can get scholarships, waivers, free camps, and more. Thanks, Terry. As always, have a great summer, and thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Still to come, we've got some ideas for your weekend from The Spectator, including a miracle in downtown Jacksonville. Miracle on Ashley Street. We'll tell you about that right after this.
I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. From the State House to the Everglades to the Panhandle, Florida has a unique story.
So join us every Friday for the Florida Roundup.
And hear from newsmakers, journalists, and Floridians from all across the state.
About the issues that matter to you.
The Florida Roundup, Fridays at 1 on WJCT.
I showed up for work the first day without any knives. I didn't know you were supposed to bring your own knives, so I borrowed one from the chef. And I was also wearing Nike running pants that were a little bit too tight underneath my apron, so I got a nickname on my first day, Chrissy Pants.
Join us next time for stories about the dangers, the pleasures, and the sometimes harsh realities of food. That's the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
Saturday at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
1 minute after 5 in the morning.
The president of the World Bank is calling.
1 minute after noon.
New York City authorities are investigating a second deadly crane collapse.
1 minute after 5 in the evening.
The commander of the Joint African Union has said.
1 minute after 11 at night.
At least one tornado is reported to have touched down today.
What's happening? What's known? What's next? 1 minute after the hour, every hour, every day. From NPR News.
Electro Lounge is now on Spotify. On the road or at home, take us wherever you go. Just search WJCT 89.9 on Spotify, where the Electro Lounge is always on.
Welcome back. Well, you are cordially invited to be part of a downtown miracle. The Miracle on Ashley Street, as it's called, sponsored by the Clara White Mission. This is the 24th annual event. And it's coming up tomorrow featuring celebrity chefs, celebrity servers, all working together to make sure everyone who is there gets a great meal. Jacoby Pittman is CEO of Clara White Mission, and she joins us now with more. Good to see you.
Good to be here. Thank you so much.
And, you know, Miracle on Ashley Street is such a great event. I've had the privilege to be part of this for several years. everybody shows up and they volunteer to lend a helping hand, to serve lunch, and it all raises money for your core mission, you know, to help low-income residents, homeless veterans. Mm-hmm. How did all this begin? How did Miracle on Ashley Street get started?
Well, it was an idea from me and one of our board members, Mr. Bernard Gregory, and he has passed away now, but at the time we were looking for a signature fundraiser for the Clara White Mission, because at that time we had not had a fundraiser. So kind of fast forwarded, you know, our first fundraiser, we raised $5,000 and I was like, whoa, that is great, right? And so now kind of fast forwarding, you know, 24 years later is that, you know, we have been able to raise about $77,000 a year on this event with the corporate sponsors that we have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So when people come to lunch on Friday over at Clara White on mm-hmm. Ashley Street, everyone from the sheriff to local politicians, TV anchors, you get all of these folks to come and serve the lunch.
Absolutely. They actually pay to serve.
Yes.
On a 30-minute shift. And it's really good to engage the community to come out and see how funding is spent and how it impacts our community. So with this being a signature fundraiser, it allows the clients to see who makes decisions about nonprofits like the Clara White Mission, and that it has a purpose and that it continues to grow each and every year.
Let's talk about the origins of the Clara White Mission. It was actually founded by Dr. Eartha White over 100 years ago, mm-hmm. a small downtown soup kitchen. But it has become everything from a training center to a housing facility. You even now are doing farming and culinary programs.
Absolutely.
It's housing. Got a lot of moving parts.
It's like an octopus, but they all go together. They feed off of each other. And so we've been able to do that because of the demand, you know, moving from a soup kitchen to more of a community, economic community development center to help people where they are in their lives.
That's really what's so incredible about it. For example, hundreds of students have gone through your training program. Mm-hmm. They've been licensed by the Florida Department of Education, mm-hmm. Particularly in your culinary program. If people come downtown to a really fun thing every Friday called Claire's at the Cathedral,
absolutely,
they can have this great lunch for $10 with live music. You sing sometimes.
And, only if it's your birthday.
only on birthdays. But it's in this beautiful setting at St. John's Cathedral. And your culinary students are doing all the meal prep, all the serving. And it's just fabulous. Yes.
They run their own restaurant, and we want to give them a hands-on where they're learning the front of the house and the back of the house. And we also have graduates that come back and help them as well. And we're proud of what they've done. You know, Melissa, we've graduated over 900 students, and 70% of them uh-huh. are still in the workforce.
That's a good track record. Mm-hmm. You've also now got a program at White Harvest Farms,
yes.
where you're doing agriculture and yes. local sustainable agriculture. Mm-hmm. So sometimes when people come to these lunches, they're getting produce from your farm.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have a 14.5-acre farm where we're doing traditional and organic farming, and we're able to have that.
There is so much going on at the Clara White Mission. We could keep talking, but we're running up to a commercial break. So you can come on out tomorrow to the Miracle on Ashley Street and just buy a great lunch. It's the 24th annual Miracle on Ashley Street, featuring celebrity chef William Ratley, training chef Kevin Smith, and a lot of local celebrities. They'll be there. So if you want your lunch served to you by... Who tell me real quick, two names of who's going to be serving.
We're going to have some of the Jaguar cheerleaders that will
there
be there.
There you go.
So come
right
on out.
Right off the bat.
Come on out.
That'll get some people in the door. Go to clarawhitemission.org. Be part of the Miracle on Ashley Street tomorrow at lunchtime. Jacoby Pittman, thanks for being here.
Thank you for inviting
me. And we've got some more ideas for your weekend right after this from The Spectator. This is First Coast Connect.
Community Hospice and Palliative Care. Since 1979, the compassionate guide for more than 200,000 patients facing advanced illness in Northeast Florida. Today, serving 16 counties, including yours. Available 24/7 to help you and your loved one. More at choosecommunityhospice.com.
ViStar Credit Union, focused on delivering quality service to its members while remaining financially strong. ViStar, we never forget that it's your money. Information available at 777-6000 or vistarcu.org.
Cambridge Analytica and the power of words.
There were segments of the population that responded to Drain the Swamp that weren't necessarily always reflected in mainstream political discourse.
A whistleblower tells Congress that President Trump's slogans far preceded his election. I'm Tanzina Vega, and that's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International.
Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, Trump versus the Deep State. We talk with Evan Osnos of The New Yorker about how hundreds of nonpartisan civil servants considered not loyal enough to the administration have been sidelined or pushed out of government. Key positions have been left open to an unprecedented degree, leaving the president with few restraints on him. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Bringing home a baby is a cause for celebration and a lot of work. Everyone dotes over the newborn, but what about mom? Many new mothers need help recognizing postpartum depression and getting support. Ending the stigma of baby blues as we wrap up our series Beyond Mother's Day next time on 1A. Weekdays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, you don't want to miss this weekend's 40th annual Historic Springfield Home Tour. Eight beautiful homes open to the public. You can even take the tour by bike this year. Kelly Rich is the new executive director of SPAR. That's the Springfield Preservation and Revitalization Council. She's here with a little preview. And full disclosure, I live in Springfield, so I'm not exactly objective about this. I'm excited about it. Good to see you. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so what's on the tour this year?
We have eight homes, five are historic, two are actually new construction, and then there's one absolutely gorgeous building that was commercial turned residential that's definitely unique. It needs to be your top priority to go see.
People can walk the tour, they can go on a guided bike tour, which is exciting, and get a little information about the historic neighborhood.
Yes, we're starting at, the tour starts at Southern Moss on Main Street, Southern Moss Realty, our title sponsor, and that's where they'll get the map and some other kind of fun goodies and stuff to get started. And a lot of it, with it being walkable, we tell people you can, there's several homes within walking distance if you want to park and then walk to those three homes.
Now, you're new in the position.
Yes.
New executive director of SPAR.
Yay,
congratulations.
Thank you.
And you're coming into this role at a great time for Springfield. There are so many new businesses going up. Lots of home construction in the neighborhood, lots of people moving in. It's really a neighborhood on the rise.
It's an exciting time in Springfield. All you have to do is just drive through. And like you said, with new construction, the housing market is turning homes over so quickly. New businesses are consistently staying and making announcements that they're opening. We're already on par to have about three new restaurants open this year. So come check it out.
Yeah, check out Springfield and check out the home tour. It's coming up this Saturday and Sunday from noon to 5. Eight beautiful homes on display, both historic and modern, in Jacksonville's oldest neighborhood. You can get your tickets online right now at sparkcouncil.org, or go to a local business in the neighborhood, or you can buy them that day, but they'll be a little more expensive.
Yeah, if you buy now before the weekend, you actually have a little bit of a discount. They're only $15, but day of, they go up to $20. And it is important to mention, this tour goes on rain or shine. Don't let a little rain scare you.
Good advice. Kelly Rich, kudos. I'll see you this weekend.
Good.
Stick around while we talk about some other stuff, okay? All right. There is a lot happening this weekend. Here to take us... right now. From from Chicago the Musical to Studio 54, here to take us all around town, we welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, the I've lost 60 pounds.
Thank you.
Carrie Speckman
That's me today.
I saw on your website you have now lost 60 pounds.
Yes, I have.
You look amazing.
Thank you.
Kudos to you.
You know what the hardest part's been? Thank you. Giving up Diet Coke.
I bet. That was your jam for years and years.
It's, you know what? Yeah. I cheat on occasion. I'm not
you
gonna...
cheat. Hey,
you have
we're
to.
All allowed to cheat.
You got to live.
Now, let's talk quickly because we're a little tight on time. Tonight through Sunday, it's the Tony Award winning musical. We're going to play a little music as we talk. Chicago.
And everybody do jazz hands.
Everybody do your jazz hands. As we listen to this great song, you know, this is the longest running American musical now in Broadway history.
You know what? That is a great trivia question.
Yeah.
I'm going to write that down.
There you go, because you do trivia nights. This is such a great show, and people might have seen the movie with Renee Zellweger, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Richard Gere. This is the Broadway musical.
I've never seen either.
Yeah, it's a great show. And it's this weekend only at the Times Union Center.
Correct.
So get your tickets now for Chicago. And speaking of tickets, are there any tickets still available for this Studio 54 Jax Bash Saturday night?
When I checked this morning, it did not say it was sold out on the website.
They might have a few tickets left.
But I would check instead of just show up.
Are you going?
Because I'm call before you
I
call.
Am going, and I wait till you see what I'm wearing to this thing.
I cannot even begin to imagine. Will you I heard you're coming in on a white horse.
No,
is that true?
There, unfortunately, that didn't work out.
Oh, that's a shame.
So there will be no Bianca Jagger moment.
What about like Cleopatra? Get carried in like that.
No.
That would be even better.
They ought to carry you in like that.
No.
Get your tickets for that at floridatheater.com. And then one more quick note. Of course, next weekend is the Jacksonville Jazz Festival. I'm really excited for Big Bad Voodoo Daddy.
Sheila E. What?
And Arturo Sandoval all
and
next weekend.
And Trombone Shorty.
That's right. You know, we have a pop-up radio station on our HD4 channel just this week and next week to get everyone excited.
I know that.
About the Jazz Festival. Jazz music all the time. It's a pop-up jazz station. If you have an HD radio, go to our HD4 channel at 89.9.
I have no idea what that means.
Yeah, I'll explain later. And the Sharks play Saturday. The Shrimp play
this
weekend and
next weekend.
What are you doing Saturday night?
I'm doing a few things.
You're just gonna float around
I'm
the town.
Just bebop. I am going on the Spring Florida home tour, though. I can tell you that.
Excellent.
I might even ride a bike.
I might do that by bike too.
I heard your home's on the tour. What's that?
It is not on
that
the tour.
Address?
No, it's not.
I'm just going to show up at your house.
Go to thespectator.com. I'll fill that class.
Okay.
Go to thespectator.com for more ideas for your weekend. Get out and enjoy your weekend, everybody. That's our show. Thanks for listening. 1A is up next. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect, and we'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow with our Friday Media Roundtable. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.